Let the watchman cry.
Well, good evening. It's time for Foundations for Life. Mike Clayton, Barry Phillips. Barry, you back from getting water?
I'm right here, man.
You know what I was thinking just as that intro music came on? Do you know what I like better about it? We do two programs together, Remnant Road and this one. You know what I like the most about this program?
What's that?
We ain't got a rooster. That stupid cyber rooster.
Well, let's pray we don't lay an egg then.
There you go. All right. Hey, how's it going in Gloucester Point, Virginia?
It's cold. We got the chilly going on tonight.
Yeah.
And it's been cold all day, actually.
Yeah, it was cold all the way down to Atlanta. I had to run down to Atlanta today and pick up Hanok. He's going to be with us for a couple days. And actually, the two of us will be traveling together until next week. And we'll see if both of us survive. But we got back. Atlanta Airport. If anybody has to go to Atlanta Airport, don't. the construction is going on there. And then Hanok came in, one of his bags. He got one of his bags. There was a bag that got caught up in the baggage thing, you know, and none of the rest of them would come out. And so I'm having to go around and around and around. And it's just an absolute mess there. I tell you, it's crazy, crazy time.
Wow.
So it was cold in Atlanta too. But you know what we call that? We call it winter.
Well, and winter's it's approaching the 21st of December. So we got, this is actually just a cold fall at the moment.
Okay. Well, you know, that's not bad either, because climate change happens continually every year.
Yes. Yes.
Words of wisdom. You heard it here first. You heard it here first on Foundations for Life. That the climates change on a daily basis.
That it is. So, Mike, we have an all-time favorite Torah portion for tonight, Vayeshev.
Yeah.
And we are introduced to the life of Yosef. And Yosef carries us to the end of this entire book.
Yeah. Yeah, 25%, about 25% of the book of Bereshit, Genesis, is devoted to this. But Barry, there's something else that's special about this Torah portion. Do you know what that is?
I'm afraid you want to tell me. What's that?
Yeah, this is the Torah portion of our new grandson, Phineas.
Congratulations, Mazel Tov. Woohoo!
Yeah, well, Daniel and Catesby. Catesby had a son the other night. Daniel was, you know, standing in the corner smiling, but they had a beautiful, beautiful baby boy, Phineas Peer. So we went out yesterday. Kathy's actually out back out there tonight. So this is the Torah portion for Phineas.
The introduction of a Yosef. Wow.
Yeah, the man who will be used to bring the family together. So, it is what it is. So, Yaakov continues living in this land, Barry, and though his grandfather was given the promise of the possession of the land, his grandfather has a title deed to part of the land. Even with that, it says that he was treated or lived as a foreigner in the land. What's up with that?
Well, and if it's anything like it is here in Virginia, especially here in some old English communities, such as is in Gloucester, the county of Gloucester, and our neighboring county, Matthews County, even more so, if you were not born here, if you do not originate here, and you are a resident here, Laura and I and our family have been here for 21 years.
Wow.
Okay? And we are come-heres. Hmm. We will never be born-heres. Now, Yaakov was born in this area, But he's been away for 21 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as he's coming back, it's like, who are you? Mm-hmm. And what you doing here, son? So there is this societal claim to the land that they want to filter whoever comes in and whatever permanency or impact that they might have. Mm-hmm. No wonder last week then when Shekem was devastated by Shimeon and Levi, Yaakov says, boys, you made us a stink around here. He was trying to reclaim and reinstitute himself as a legitimate dweller in the land. And they stunk up the joint, mm-hmm, and gave him a terrible reputation. So he's trying to dwell in the land where it's not the land, but it's the people of the land. They don't want him there. And maybe like they felt like that the claim of the covenant was less effective when he was gone. But now that he's back, we're not going to allow that effect to begin to regenerate itself.
Okay, that brings up a question. The only one that was told about this covenant originally was Abraham. Of course, this would have been passed down. The covenant was, we see that for Isaac and for Jacob. But there's nothing stated that anyone outside of the family ever knew about that covenant.
Okay.
So I'm just thinking, you know, these people, this is their house. This is their home. It's kind of like, you know, somebody that owns a, you know, a large piece of property. They die and they leave it in their will to somebody else. And they come in there. Well, wait a minute. Who are you? Kind of thing. You know, who gave you this? What, you know, you don't have the same last name or something, you know? So the thought that even these people really, I mean, they were not professing the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that we can see in any way. Mm-hmm. So if they are not respecting the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, then they would not respect the covenant given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Or maybe they was aware of the covenant, but they didn't want the covenant to be in effect. When Yah said Israel in, he said you have to drive these people out. And in Abraham's day, he said, "No, Abraham, your descendants are going to go into bondage for over 400 years because the sins of the Amorites have not come to the full, even though the Amorites did not belong in that land. Yah was not going to drive them out until there was legitimate spiritual and legal spiritual, mm-hmm, reason to do so." I mean, mm-hmm, that's a completely different teaching. But in a legal court of the spirit realm, the sins of the Amorite had to come to a place to where now it's time to drive them out. That's not happened yet. So they've got to deal with these, what I call squatters. They're in the land, but they don't really legally hold title to the land. They dispossess the land. There's a difference between holding legal title and possessing. When you possess something other or you're on something that doesn't belong to you, you're squatting.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing is happening in Israel today.
How so?
We see the Bedouins.
Okay.
You know, and this is a big deal. We'd have to, you know, talk to Hanok on Remnant Road about this a little bit more, but the Bedouins, for years, there was nobody in the political system was doing anything about these people. They were just the nomads going back centuries. And they're, you know, going from place to place and, you know, setting up their tents wherever and feeding their flocks. And now, though, they've become more stable as far as they still have their tents and their flocks and everything. But they also have their water trucks to bring in water, and they have their satellite dish outside, and they have their car, and they have all kinds of stuff. And it's, so basically they have they've taken possession, but they've taken possession that doesn't of something that doesn't belong to them. But there's no one doing anything about it. We can say the same thing for the Palestinians. We can say the same thing for these people that are there that have no biblical right to the land. But who's saying that, okay, here's the border. You guys need to head over that, on the other side. Now, what would happen? This is kind of one of these scenarios, a little bit off track here. But what would happen if tomorrow Israel had enough money to purchase a piece of land from Jordan and build a city in Jordan large enough for every Palestinian in Israel to go over into Jordan and set up a town, a city, and have an economy and all of those things? Nobody would do it. They wouldn't do it because it's not about who is there. It's about, it is about the covenant.
Uh-huh.
And here's the fight. It's about the covenant.
Wow. That it is. That is. So Abraham himself was a nomad, mm-hmm. a nomadic shepherd. Yitzhak had received the title deed to the land. And now Yaakov's trying to settle down in the land. And you would think, well, why does he want to settle down? No one else before him has really done so. But look, he's already fought it all. He fought Esau, which is a type of the Roman church system, if you will. He struggled with Laban, who is the systemite pastor who uses anointed men for his own gain. He's wrestled with Hamor, the king of Shechem, and his doctrine was peace and acceptance through assimilation. He's overcome all of that. He carries the title of Israel now. He's got his family. He's got his flocks. He's got his herds. If he could just find a place, he could have some ease. He could sit back and enjoy life. He could stop fighting.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for acceptance and just normalcy. And isn't that the goal of the American Ephraimite? We just, we want to do our thing, but we want to be accepted. We want everybody to say, oh, you celebrate those holidays. Oh, that's just wonderful. I'm so glad you do that. Shabbat, sure, we'd love for you to get Shabbat off. And here, how can we help you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you need to go away for Sukkot, and you need paid time off. You know what? We're talking to human resources. I think we can arrange that for you. And your children don't have any homework to catch up in school. It's a recognized holiday. This is just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
We're so happy to have you Hebrews living among us. Oh, you don't want to hear jingle bells during December in Walmart. When we see you come in the parking lot, I tell you what, we will switch and we'll put on elevator music and something different just for you, because you're such a special Hebrew person. It's not going to work.
No.
We're in this world, but we're not of this world.
Okay, you bring that verse out, that we are to be of in this world, but not of this world. And that is a great verse. But how many people really live that verse?
Two, probably. Me and you, brother, me and you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe we'll say three and bring Hanok in on that one. But, it's a verse that's great to state. But the simple fact is that most people really have not sat out. Maybe I haven't sat down either and really considered, what does that verse mean? Because it becomes this thing of, well, I can't, I shouldn't do, it becomes a list of things, but it's about a world system. It's about a system that brings you in, that controls you, that puts you into slavery. It's something totally different. And then you have somebody that comes along with a dream. Okay, to move us into the next verse, we have this 17-year-old kid that is probably, you know, got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Daddy's given him a coat of many colors. And here he is. You know, he comes home and tattles a little bit. And then he's given a dream. Okay. Now, when he gets this dream, you know, the argument is he should have just kept it to himself. And, yeah, he probably should have. But how many times in the last 24 hours has anyone been guilty of, you know, kind of a little bragging rights of something?
Just a few. You know, we're all guilty. You know, we get this dream, this vision from Yah. We see ourselves doing something bigger, grander, more outlandish than what our current state of being is capable of handling. And what do? We don't normally keep it to ourselves. We need to tell somebody. You know, I got this word of prophecy, and I'm going to travel the world and win a million souls. Or, you know, the Father's going to give me a recording contract, and I'm going to be the next greatest worship leader at Hillsong or whatever. And people look at us and say, you're out of your mind. You know, you're dreaming. Well, yes, that's exactly it. We're dreaming. And there, you know, I've been shamed for dreaming, and I've shamed myself, thinking, "Son, you're just going to have to settle it down." Mike, I've had dreams and ambitions that, at this stage of life, I'm thinking, "Okay, son, that's probably not going to happen," and you need to stop spending so much time thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Well, therein is the difference. If we have a dream. And it's out there a bit. Well, any dream worth anything is going to be out there a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to think about it and want it and desire it. It's another thing to go after it. So if you're going to be a better musician, you're going to be a better teacher, you're going to be you're going to have a bigger job, you're going to, you know, whatever it is that you're going to accomplish. You can't just sit back and say, I have a dream and never do anything about it. The dream itself is not enough. You have to add something to it. Some labor, some preparation, some effort on your part to make that happen. It's not going to be laid in your lap. When Yosef, we see next week that he dramatically is brought before Pharaoh and is made the second most powerful man in the land, that didn't happen overnight. And Yah prepared him in ways he couldn't prepare himself for. Mm-hmm. So you and I can prepare ourselves. We can study and show ourselves approved. We can practice. We can gain skills. We can go to school. We can do whatever we need to do. But then Yah's going to do his part. And Yah crafts a part of us that we can't craft. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. So when you've been given a dream, get the stars out of your eyes and realize how much work it's going to take to get there. Now, do you want the dream or not?
Okay, but the work that it's going to take to get there is not the external work. This is the thing that I see in... I've been really thinking through the person of Moses, Moshe, a lot in the last few days. I'm thinking through the person of Joseph. You know, the work, the dream, to go forth with that dream. We're taught to have dreams and to put them down and to go for them, but it's actually the journey in our own life, and I really don't like that word. It's so overused, but I can't find another word yet. But it's the journey of us becoming the person that can handle the end result of the dream. If Joseph had have been taken from right here, from the place that he was given the dream, and have been taken to Egypt and put immediately in charge, what would have happened?
We'd all still be suffering.
Oh, total disaster. Absolute disaster. What if Moshe would have been able to, you know, go from the, from that day and of that infamous day of killing the Egyptian, and, you know, he walks back in and Pharaoh says, hey, okay, I give up. Your people are ready to go. Moshe, it would have been a disaster. It's the process of getting us from where we are to the dream, which is the making of the man or woman that can handle the end result of the dream. Does that make sense?
So when someone prays, Father, I'm asking you for an increase of income. I need to be operating on an amount that's 2, 3, 4 times my current budget. He doesn't just write us a check. He doesn't just instantly inspire our supervisor, boss, whoever, to come and say, I'm going to give you a quadruple raise. Rather, he takes us through a process to where we would know what to do with the money. Otherwise, we'd be like someone who won a lottery. And in a year or two, we and the lottery winnings would be separated. It'd all be gone. Yah just does not endow gifts without the process of equipping us to use them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the rest of the story. Oh, so you're anointed. Wonderful. You're a prophet. Excellent. To prepare you for the use of your gifting, this is what you're going to be challenged with. Mm-hmm. When Rav Shaul was knocked off his high horse, literally and figuratively, left blinded, Hananiah was sent over to him with the understanding of, not only am I going to pray for him so that he can see and his blindness be healed, but I have to tell him what great things he has to suffer for the name of the Messiah that he's caused others to suffer for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rav Shaul, do you still want to follow me and be a spokesman of me?
You think that Rav Shaul would have taken, if he had known everything that was going to happen to him, from the shipwrecks to the beatings to all of those things, would he have gone forth and said yes to that? The knee-jerk answer is, well, of course. The same as the knee-jerk answer is that if he was to show us everything we're going to have to, you know, go through between now and the kingdom, of course I would. Of course, yeah, I won't deny you. I'm fine. Yeah, I'm in it for the long haul. Oh really? Oh really? Let's see what happens along the way, as it becomes about you becoming the man or the woman that I've created you to be. Not just proclaiming something, you know, kind of the blab it and grab it kind of thing. All right, Barry. Well, things to think about here. We're going to come back on the other side as Joseph's going to be doing something, to me, some of the most incredible words in all of Scripture. We're going to be reading those as we come back. We'll be right back.
watch me cry. Stand up on mighty ground and say you're right.
Welcome back to Foundations for Life with Mike Clayton and Barry Phillips. And we are talking about the life of Joseph. And Mike, we've been talking about this conflict. We were talking about Joseph's dreams, but there was a conflict that it wasn't wrong for Joseph to have dreams. Mm-hmm. The way he handled his dreams may not have expressed the greatest amount of wisdom and maturity, but certainly his brother's reactions to his dreams, instead of ignoring him, instead of laughing at him, they got mad. And I guess, you know, it was rooted in a jealousy about daddy. Evidently, Yaakov doted on and bragged about and promoted Joseph shamelessly to the rest of his brothers. Why can't the rest of you guys be like Joseph? Look at him. He's so smart. He's so handsome. He's so, you know, on and on and on. Yaakov may not have done Joseph any favors in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But the rabbis teach, Mike, that everything that was needed for Am Yisrael to become a nation and a people had been invested in Yaakov, and everything that was found in Yaakov was also then found in Joseph. Hmm. That just like Yeshua was concerning the Father, that Joseph was the exact representation of daddy, exactly like him. Some even go so far as to say that later on when Joseph, and we talk about this tonight, when Joseph was tempted with Potiphar's wife, that he saw his face in the mirror and it was his own father's reflection that he saw in his own face. So everything that Joseph was first found in Yaakov. You know, and so we're making connections this year on the Brit Hadashah.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same jealousy situation when Yeshua appeared, his brothers saw the Father. And when Yeshua was describing his coming kingdom, his rulership, his authority, and demonstrated miraculously that which was needed to authenticate that, man, it was, you know, they could have laughed at him, they could have ignored him, but they got angry at him. And they plotted, just like Joseph's brothers, how do we get rid of this guy? So what Yeshua endured is what Joseph had already endured. And then, of course, there's, you know, teaching you have done extremely well and very often, Messiah ben Joseph, Messiah ben David. So Joseph's life is a prophetic declaration of what Yeshua would walk through. But it was because, I think, of this, the similarity and the significant duplication, if you will, of father and son.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, envy, jealousy, those are themes for this family. We see it coming out in Yosef in a, you know, a whole new level. But that same thing is happening today. The verse in Isaiah chapter 11, verse 13 is very well known. Ephraim's jealousy will cease. Those who harass Yehuda will be cut off. Ephraim will stop envying Yehuda. Yehuda will stop provoking Ephraim. This thing of envy, jealousy is going all the way through the family. It almost produced death in that day and is almost producing death in our day. But, mm-hmm. you know, the other side of this thing is the words I said going on to the break, some of the most beautiful words. And you know, maybe people are going to go, wow, I've never quite seen those as that beautiful. But some of the most beautiful words to me in the scriptures are these. When Yosef says, you know, he's there at Shechem, where you and I have been, that area. there's actually the Yodlea thrift store. One of them is right there on that little corner. This is the roundabout going up to Harbor Kai, and it's thought that this is the same place that Yosef runs into this man and asks, you know, and he says, well, what are you looking for? He says, I'm looking for my brothers. This is the first family search. You know, people do genealogy today, trying to find who their ancestors are, going to ancestry.com and all these different websites, you know, trying to find out something. Well, this is the genealogy search of all times. I'm looking for my brothers. And, you know, I've spending just a few quick hours in the truck today coming up from Atlanta with Hanok, and as we'll be spending time together, this is kind of the theme of who we are. We're looking for our brothers. And our brothers may not believe the same as we do. At the moment, they may never believe exactly the same, and that's okay. Our brothers aren't going to look the same. They're not going to act the same. These 12 boys, these 12 tribes at the time, you know, who are just 12 boys, these guys were not the same. But Yosef, though he had maybe the immaturity and a number of things, he did have this. He knew that he was told by the father to go find your brothers, and he did that. He could have gone out and wandering around in the wilderness up in the north of Israel for a while and gone back to his dad and said, Dad couldn't find them. Yeah, they weren't anywhere to be found. Yeah, I looked up there around where they're normally hanging out. Yeah, I couldn't find them anywhere, so I just came back and let's me and you hang out together. But he did what he was supposed to do. Because of that, he ended up being thrown into a cistern. And in this, you know, another verse that stands out to me all the time, verse 19, they said to each other, look, this dreamer is coming. Let's kill him. Let's kill him. This is one of those things that just has bothered me through the years and continues to. If you have a dream, you know, I'm not talking about Martin Luther's either, but if you have a dream, you begin to think outside the box. You begin to to color outside the lines with the crayons. You get smacked on the back of the wrist. People do not like dreamers. They like status quo. They want to talk about dreams, but a person that actually acts on those dreams, everyone will come against them. Right. People will come against them to kill that dream, to put that dream into a pit, to do whatever they have to do to make sure that dream doesn't come to pass.
One might, I'll give you a shameless plug. I invite people to go and listen to my just posted Reconnect. It'll be posted immediately after this program. It's been recorded and going up. But it talks about just what you said. People religiously draw the lines and dare you to color outside of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or else you won't be accepted. You know, when Yosef says, I'm looking for my brothers, I'm immediately reminded of Yeshua saying, I did not come but for the lost sheep of the Israel.
Yeah.
Yeshua came looking for us. You know, no one else was caring about us. No one else was even aware, probably not even aware of our existence, but Yeshua came looking for us. Man, I'm glad he found me.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm glad he found me.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about that. So,
all right, so yeah. Go ahead.
So they stripped him of his identity. This long-sleeved, multicolored robe that he was wearing, they took it and, you know, threw it into the cistern. I was just there in Itamar. There's these cisterns there. Cisterns were, if there's no water in them, they're known to have something else in them, and that's snakes. This is not a comfortable place. This is not a nice place to be. I mean, being thrown into a dark place, then you don't really know what's there. you start hearing some rattles or something like that, or, you know, spiders and all kinds of things. You never know what's in one of those. The cold heart of family sometimes is portrayed right here. That, you know, this man is, of course, you know, they got the same father but different mothers, but they didn't respect the family because, again, the differences that were there. So throwing him into this pit and, you know, plotting to sell him, in the end, they would not profit at all. They would be tricked in their own plotting. And then Reuben comes along and wants to come back. And then, because he did not have the backbone to stand up against his brothers. And in actuality, you know, Reuben is the firstborn here. Now, it can be argued that Yosef is the firstborn of the beloved wife, Raquel, that, you know, Yosef was given the dreams. Okay, I got that. But in a natural sense, Reuben was the firstborn of the wife Leah, and so he should have taken the role of leadership. But instead of taking that role of leadership, he was afraid for his own life. Right. He was wondering if the brothers were going to turn on him. You know, maybe they're going to throw me in that pit with him. Leadership means that you're willing to lay down your life. I think that there's a verse in the Renewed Covenant about that, of no greater love as a man for another that he would lay down his life for his friends.
Right, right. Reuben is, he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. You know, he doesn't speak well. He's hot-headed. He speaks before he thinks. Obviously, I mean, there are just some statements that he makes. And when he comes to the pit and he sees that it's empty, he says, now what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. How do I go home and face Daddy? What did y'all do with him? He's not really concerned for Yosef.
No.
He's concerned about him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's afraid, I'm going to be held responsible for what you bunch of yahoos have done here. But, you know, Yah has this all. I find it amazing, Mike, that Yah has all of our personality quirks, our, what's the big word, idiosyncrasies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if I can spell what I don't even think I can spell that.
Starts with idiot.
Yeah. Synchronizing idiots.
That's good, Barry. That's good.
Yeah. So, you know, he takes all of those things into account. We think, you know, he's just looking at us on a large scale general version of ourselves. No, he's got it down to the detail of how we're going to respond, what we would end up saying, how we would feel about what was said, etc. As this entire play plays out, he's got it all calculated and he knows how it's going to work. I'm blown away by that. He takes my faults as well as my skills into consideration as to how to move me through this plan of life that he's got. I won't say journey because you don't like that word. So this plan of life that I have, and he's got that all involved. He used Reuben's junk and Yehuda's jealousy and Shimeon's anger and Yosef's grandiose expectations of himself, all to bring about a plan.
Mm-hmm.
So the next time we think, I just don't see how this is going to work out. I just don't know that this is going to happen. He's got this. He really has got this, and it's going to be all right. It may surprise us how it turns out. It may surprise us as to how we end up being involved in all of this. But he's got this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does.
Chapter 38, do you want to go there?
I guess we can since it's after 37.
I found it interesting that not only was Yosef taking down But Yehuda by choice went down.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are, you know, both of these houses here are making a descent. Yehuda goes down to an Adullamite named Hira. Adullam means justice for the people. Hira means noble family. And normally it's not the nobles who care about justice for the people. But in the Middle East, right now, the nobility of the Arabic peoples are crying out for justice for a people,
mm-hmm.
or a contrived people, a politically contrived people, the Palestinians, if you would want to call them that. So why would Yehuda make any partnership? Why would he become an ally of someone like that? You know, and it's the same question that can be asked of modern day Israel. Why would you play the game with these people? Why would you even want to have to sit down at the table and figure it out with these people? Consuming all your time, all your money, and your expected future about how this is all going to work out. So, you know, there's this understanding that it's racism and to some degree.
Hmm.
You think about Abraham and Sarah were Semites. Yitzhak then was a Semite.
Mm-hmm.
He married another Semite, Rivka. And out of that union came forth Yaakov, a Semite. Yehuda is a Semite. So Ishmael was part Mitzrite. He married a Mitzrite. Esau was a Semite, but he married into pagan wives, and then he aligned himself through marriage with Ishmael. And you would think, with all of those wrong examples and how wrong it turned out for those guys, why would Yehuda want to do the same thing and marry a pagan wife and ruin his lineage? And Mike, as best I can come up with is, those guys, Ishmael, Esau, and at this point Yehuda, they all made that pagan choice because they felt like, as far as the covenant is concerned, it just doesn't matter anymore. If we give up on covenant, if we give up on the covenant promises and the kingdom that is attached to the covenant, we stop walking righteously and we start making foolish decisions.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Hmm. So how do we keep from making those foolish decisions, Barry? I mean, this whole return to Torah is about us being connected to that covenant and to the land.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the midst of that, there are decisions that people make that distract them from the truth of the covenant. You know, this thing comes along, that thing comes along, all these different little whatevers come along, and all of a sudden, people are out in the middle of nowhere. How do we stay connected with the covenant principles? I don't know, maybe it's totally off subject, but it's just a...
Well, it's not that much, though. You know, if you think about it this way, Mike, The leadership in Yeshua's day had gotten away from covenant,
mm-hmm.
and they became focused on ritual, prominence, prestige, authority, political position, etc. The people under that leadership languished. They yearned for a difference, but they didn't know how to effect any change. They felt powerless to do so. When Yeshua came and began to preach the kingdom, for the first time in a very, very, very long time, there was a sense of hope.
Mm-hmm.
Covenant means hope. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, the scripture says.
Covenant means hope. Wait a minute. Let's unpack that one a little bit. Covenant means hope.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about Ephesians chapter 2, to tie that in, it says that you Gentiles, you former Gentiles, at one time you had no hope. You were estranged from the commonwealth or the covenant of Israel.
Yes.
So when somebody says they have no hope, the answer to their hopelessness is covenant.
So think about the covenant when it was given at the covenant between the pieces.
Okay.
Yah did not make Avram pass through.
Exactly.
He passed through himself. Basically, he was saying, I know you or your descendants will fail at the tenets of this covenant, but I will pay the price for the failure. And you're talking about the greatest of hope. Not only do I have the covenant, I have a covenant with the creator of the universe, and he's going to guarantee to his own suffering the covenant. In other words, the creator is going to do everything absolutely necessary and possible to bring about the fulfillment of this covenant, which says that I'm going to give to you this land. Yeah. And to your descendants. And yeah. If you can count the stars in heaven, that's how many there are of them. I'm going to bring that to pass. And the seed with the capital S is going to come. The prophets enlarged on that and said, he will rule and reign with the kingdom of Yahweh on the earth. So you talking about hope. Mike, if we don't have that, can you imagine having hope only in the American process of politics to fix our need and our problems?
Oh, I was listening to a little bit of that today as I'm going down to Atlanta, you know, just to kind of catch up on what's happening around the world. And these people that live, breathe, sleep, eat, die on what political parties in power, and that, you know, this person got this and this many seats here and this many seats there. I couldn't do that. I mean, just go ahead and, you know, I don't know what you do. You hear their only hope is in mankind. I mean, anyone that has hope, that all of their hope is wrapped up in man doing better. You got 6,000 years that say that dog ain't going to hunt. Yeah, for those of you that are not from the South, you don't know, might not get that one, but it's not happening.
It doesn't matter to any difference as to whether one party or another in our government or some other country's government, you know, if it's conservatives, if it's liberals, whatever brands they wear, Yah's plan remains the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yah is not limited or empowered by our voting booth. Now, how it affects and how it's you know, acted out in the earth, that may be determined to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as his plan is his plan. It's going to happen.
Yes.
And Yah has already considered, I was talking about all of our junk, he's considered society and governmental junk as well. He's got that. It's all figured in. Now, that doesn't mean we go with the flow. We vote as righteously and as wisely as we can. But the results are in Yah's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Russians.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not the Chinese and not even the government. Yah knows what he's doing. But, you know, we pray for our leaders, et cetera, and we honor them. But, Mike, I got to tell you, you know, with the kingdom of heaven on the horizon, that's what I'm staring at.
And music.
let the watchman cry. Stand up on mighty Priam.
Welcome back to Foundations for Life with the Barry Phillips, Mike Clayton. Who else did you think was going to be here? Right. Oh, sometimes I ought to be quiet. But so Barry, we were talking a little bit more about this before we go into 39, about, you know, Yehuda's just, he's sitting there, it's like, okay, dad's depressed and doesn't want to have anything to do with anybody, and Yehuda knows the truth, all the boys know the truth, they're covering for each other, and, you know, Yehuda's like, whatever, I'm out of here, and he just walks away from the whole thing. Ends up having a little time with what he thinks is a prostitute. But, you know, as you read the whole account, it's amazing. As you were saying, you know, that the plans of Hashem are going to come to pass. And that doesn't mean that we don't have a place, that we don't have a purpose, we don't have something that we are to accomplish in the midst of it. But he is going to bring his purposes for this family about, many times in spite of us, right?
And well, I mean, the question is, Yah's plan is going to go forth. The question is, are we going to be a significant part of that, or are we going to exclude ourselves from prominence in it? You know, I can make a decision that is unwise, out of his will, stubbornly choose to follow my own way. What I'm doing is I'm culling myself out of this central theme of Yah's plan, and I'm being sidelined. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to be one of those that stand before Messiah and say, well, you ran well for a while. What has hindered you? Why did you choose what you chose? You know, so, you know, we choose our significance by our obedience.
Yeah, I was talking to, I remember years ago, a pastor, kind of a pastor emeritus down in the panhandle of Florida was talking, we were talking, and he was telling me about a visitation call that he did. He was one of the people that went out, you know, and if somebody wasn't in church for a few weeks, he'd go by and talk to him a little bit and, you know, give a little pep talk, trying to get him back in church. And so he told me a story about visiting this one man. And the guy was burning some, he was standing out, he was burning some things, burning some wood from, he'd cut down a tree. So he had a fire going on. And as they were standing there, of course, you know, two men standing around a fire, both of them will pick up a stick and poke at it. That's just what guys do. So,
that's what we do.
Yeah, it's just what we do. Why do we do it? Because we can. But so he took, as he was talking to this guy, he was, you know, saying, hey, we missed you for the last few weeks, and, you know, kind of get the conversation going. He says, for some reason, I just reached down and I took a little coal of wood and I moved it outside of the fire ring a little bit and just let it sit there. He said, we kept talking. And he said, I finally looked up at the man and said, you know, he said, you see that piece of wood right there? That little piece of coal? He said, it was burnt. It was fiery hot. It was glowing. The embers were glowing. He says, but when I separated it and put it to the side, you see how the embers have gone, almost gone out? And it's growing cold. And the man looked at him and said, I'll be in church next Sunday.
Mm.
You know, there's people that have, they're living in isolation, not because they want to. We know many of them. But there's other people that are living in isolation because they do want to. Isolation is not a good thing. If you're called to it, if that's the only thing, but, you know, we live in the day of internet, where even if a person is isolated, they can still be connected in some way. You know, thankfully for Hebrew Nation, for Messianic Lamb, for other avenues that are out there, other venues. But for a person just isolate themselves, thinking that they're an island unto themselves, eventually they're going to find themselves very cold.
Wow.
Well, Tamar didn't. I mean, you know, Yehuda didn't find himself cold. He found himself with Tamar, but that's another story. So all the while.
That's another story.
Yeah, that's another story we won't go into because it is a family show. But all the while, as this is going on within the family, this dysfunctional family, back in the land of promise, we have the plans and purposes of the father are being laid out in the life of Yosef. Yosef is right where he's supposed to be. He comes to prominence. He goes from the pit. He comes to a place of prominence. We're going to see him go back to a pit and then finally back up to another place of prominence, a place greater than what he could have ever imagined. But, you know, this is a man that was given favor. No matter where he went, he was given favor. One of my favorite Hebrew, I don't know much Hebrew, but one Hebrew word that I learned recently was the word ratzon, which means favor.
Mm.
And I pray that for people. I pray that for myself, that in the midst of, even in the midst of trials, that we would have ratzon. It is his favor, his unmerited favor, yes, but still his favor that makes us stand out from other people. You know, what separates us from others is the favor of Elohim, of Hashem, working in our lives.
Right.
And that's what Yosef did. He came to that place of favor with Potiphar. You know, there's a verse here that is kind of funny or fun to look at, that Potiphar gave Yosef charge over everything in his house except for his wife. But there was one thing, and that was, you know, okay, that's out of bounds. But then Yosef set a boundary also. He could have said, hey, you know, I'm down here in Egypt. When you're in Egypt, do like the Egyptians.
Egyptians do. Yes.
Yeah. But instead it says that so he left all his possessions in Yosef's care, and because he had him, he paid no attention to his affairs except for the food he ate. There's this thing about food. We'll see this thing about food coming up over and over again throughout the rest of Bereshit. We see food with the baker, then we see it with the brothers coming back, and you know, the meal that's prepared. You know, food has to do with covenant. Once again, here's that word covenant that's coming up. So it appears that Yosef, though he found himself in Egypt, he never came into covenant with Egypt. He lived, as you have stated, he lived as an exile, a person in exile, not a person in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
A person in captivity will mold them, will allow their surroundings to mold them. A person in exile will never do that.
They'll always be looking for home.
Always be looking for home, and will not succumb to the pressures of the customs of the day, of wherever they are. It's, you know, we see of Reuben in the prophecies that were given, that will be given later on here. You know, Reuben, you're as unstable as water. We don't need to be unstable. Wherever we are at, we need to be the example, not that unstable person that's just kind of, you know, molding to anybody around them. But we need to be a person of conviction. Yosef, I see him as a man of conviction. And because he is a man of conviction, that conviction would put him into a prison. But he would go into prison with a clear conscience.
You know, when you look at that, someone might say, you know, if you are in the will of God, to speak generally here, if you were following what was required of you, this kind of stuff wouldn't be happening to you. And there have been those who would say, this ought to be a clue to you that you're out of his will.
Mm-hmm.
Concerning Joseph, though, nothing could be further from the truth. Yah allowed, and whether we like to think about it or not, he had, as a part of his will, this period of time where Joseph needed to go to prison. Well, I just don't believe he does his people that way. But there were things that Joseph needed to experience and to learn in order to be prepared for national level administration. And you thought, well, what in the world would a prison teach him? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that's where he was at when Pharaoh needed him and he could be found. You know, if he was still at Potiphar's house, nobody really would have known about him outside of Potiphar's house. Hmm. The baker and the cupbearer would have never encountered him. Hmm. So, you know, Yah needed to put him where he needed to be. So that makes me, nobody likes this verse. Nobody. I've preached on it when I was an evangelist, and I didn't get many amens out of it. I can tell you that. But first, Kepha, 1 Peter chapter 4, beginning with verse 12. Beloved ones, do not be surprised at the fiery trial that is coming upon you to try you as though some unusual, the King James says some strange thing
mm-hmm.
has befallen you. But as you share Messiah's sufferings, rejoice, in order that you might rejoice exultingly at the revelation of his esteem. If you are reproached with the name of Messiah, you are blessed, because the spirit of esteem and of Elohim rest upon you. On their part, he's blasphemed, but on your part, he's praised. You know, Joseph very easily, when Potiphar's wife grabbed him, from what I've studied, Mike, it was the when she grabbed him, she was saying, as the Hebrew would translate, come lie with me.
Mm-hmm.
Lay down with me and then enter into lies with me. You know, with Joseph's character, he would have never been able to hide his face from Potiphar effectively. Potiphar would have seen right through him if he'd ever been guilty. But the day in particular where the culmination of this thing came around was, from what I understand, a day of frivolity and great sensual license in Mitzrayim, where it was just understood anything goes and all is permitted.
Mm-hmm.
And so with everyone else out of the house, out in the carnival atmosphere or whatever may have been going on elsewhere, Joseph found himself alone with her, and it was socially permitted. No one would have pointed a finger at him, but he knew Elohim would. It's interesting, the parallel here. I said earlier that Yehuda went down, Joseph went down.
Mm-hmm.
Yehuda left his belongings in the hands of the woman that wanted to have relations with him. And Joseph left his garment, his belongings, if you will, in the hand of the same kind of woman of a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these men left what belonged with them with the woman. And both of them were forced to claim what they had left.
But only one Yehuda, of them. Go ahead.
Yehuda was actually guilty and got a slap on the wrist, it would seem. Joseph was innocent, and he paid a dear price.
Mm-hmm.
The irony of all of that is just very, very intriguing.
But once again, would you rather have a slap on the wrist and a guilty conscience, or be put into a prison cell but have a clear conscience. I mean, that's what it comes down to right here.
Integrity.
Integrity. I have my integrity. In you know, there's nothing, there's really not much greater in the world than knowing that you are walking in integrity. If I walk, you know, I was talking to somebody recently that a person is not the value, the worth, the character of a person is not that they've never been tried, but it's what they do when they've been tried. It's when you go through a trial and you walk out on the other end with integrity. That proves the character of a man. In fact, Jasher talks about that Potiphar knew that Yosef was innocent because of the way the robe had been torn. Because Potiphar's wife says that he was attacking me, and you know, and I ripped the robe from him, which means it would have had a tear in the back. But it was ripped in the front because he was trying to run away from her and she grabbed the robe and it tore. So Jasher, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I think it, to me, it makes perfectly good sense because of the types and shadows that are going on behind the scenes. So we see that that Yosef was trying to get away. And that Potiphar knew that he was innocent. And this is where I tie this prophetic picture into Potiphar is very similar to Marcion. Potiphar's wife is very similar to Marcion. In the he was the first Gentile leader of the congregation and in Jerusalem. And we see that Marcion ripped the Hebraic heritage from the early congregation.
Right.
Coming up with doctrines that's still very alive today. But then we see that, so that's Potiphar's wife. And then the prophetic picture of Potiphar being what Constantine would do later on. Constantine knew what was right and what was wrong. And he went forward with wrong anyway. Potiphar knew what was right and wrong, but he wouldn't stand up to his wife.
Yeah, my mind's running in a million different directions with that, but yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Yeshua was falsely accused. Yeshua could have told the Yodim what they wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
He could have said, look, I'm sorry for causing you guys such a problem. He knew what it was going to cost him to hold to the line of integrity.
Oh, yeah.
He had already prayed, yeah, if there's another way to get this done, nevertheless, not my will, yours be done. And yeah. He was... You know, in his prayer, I'm willing to drink this cup. You know, he only drank of the four cups at Pesach that night. He only drank three. He drank the fourth cup on the cross when they offered him the wine with the gall in it, and he tasted of that and died. Man, I tell you, what Yeshua did for us. I was talking to someone this week about. Folks denying Yeshua and walking away. You know, against all better judgment and against all other advice, Keith had already told him, please don't do it this way.
Yeah.
You know, surely you don't need to die. Yeshua steadfastly set his face like flint toward Jerusalem and went there with the extreme purpose of, I have to die for my people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to deny him and walk away. I tell you what, those that were nice to Joseph in prison when he became viceroy of Mitzrayim, I think that they were glad that he wasn't going to drag him out of prison and have him slain.
Yeah.
It pays to know who you're dealing with, Mike.
There you go. It pays to have a little discernment of what's going on in the world around us. Okay, so we got about we got just a few more minutes here before we go to the break. And we do see this, you know, what you just mentioned, that he's in, this is actually a pretty short Torah portion that we're into this week, especially since I turned too many pages at the same time. But, so we're going to see that here's this man that's going to be, he's going to be put in this prison, but yet the dream is still in him. The dream never dies. No matter what, you know, and this is, I guess this is kind of, sideline counsel here. But if the Father has given you a promise, don't lose hope on the promise just because of your circumstances. Your circumstances have no bearing on the fulfillment of his promise.
Okay. So whatever your present circumstance does not fully determine your future.
No, not at all.
Your past definitely doesn't. I mean, it shapes our thinking. It shapes our conditioning to some degree.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be ruled by it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to be ruled by it. And here's the work that's happening in Yosef as he's in the prison cell. is that he is going from what we believe to be this kind of an arrogant kid. Maturity is happening. Maturity is happening. He could not have been the person that he needed to be had it not been for this time in the prison. He must go through that. And here's the thing. We must go through the things that the Father brings into our life. And you know, it's too often do we hear this thing, well, you know, the powers of Satan, the devil's doing this. Right? There's no record anywhere of anything happening here that has any fingerprint of HaSatan. This is all being orchestrated by the Father. Yosef could have sat down there in that prison cell for however long he was there, and 24/7 rebuked HaSatan, and he would still be sitting in the prison cell.
So before you rebuke the devil, you might want to make sure it's the devil.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, here's HaSatan going, I ain't got anything to do with this. You know, I'm not involved here. This is the plans and purposes of the Father. So we find ourselves in different situations at different times in life. It's the difference between those Hebrew words, lima and lama, which is one of them is why, and the other one is for what purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So when Yosef came to the place of asking, not asking why I'm here, but asking for what purpose am I here, then I think that began the process of changing the circumstances that would then bring the dream to pass in his life.
Joseph has got to think he's at the furthest place from the dream, and we'll talk more about that on the other side, because music's
playing right there. Thank you.
watch me cry. Stand up on mighty Ephraim and say you're right.
And welcome back to the final segment of tonight's Foundations for Life with Mike Clayton, myself, Barry Phillips. And we are winding down Vayeshev, and he dwelt. Yaakov was trying to dwell in the land. Yehuda's trying to dwell somewhere other than the land. Yosef is dwelling everywhere but where he wants to dwell. Nobody seems to be dwelling peaceably, profitably, fruit-bearing. No one's content with their situation.
No, it's a place of turmoil. There's no doubt about that.
You know, I guess we could ask the question, Mike, are we content? You know, it's one thing to be keeping your eyes on the prize. Mm-hmm. And that means you've not gotten there yet. You're still some distance away from your ultimate goal. Okay, so the kingdom's the goal. We want to get there. We want to be in the reign of Messiah. We want to experience kingdom life. As wonderful as we can imagine it's going to be, we probably are coming up a bit short on our imagination level. That being the prize, I don't want to spend my days angry or frustrated or kicking in my heels in the dirt because we're not there yet. I need to find some level of contentment where I'm at, and with what I'm doing and how I'm being. But my contentment, as you say, shouldn't push my tent pegs too deeply into the ground. So where do we find a balance, do you think, between dwelling contently, mm-hmm, but never losing sight of the horizon? Is there a balance in that? And if so, how do we achieve that?
I guess that Rav Shaul would have said it best when he said, I have learned in all circumstances to be content with my situation. Now, he had been given some amazing, you know, he was given a vision. He was taken to, I believe, to Mount Sinai in Arabia. He had seen some incredible things. This man was a man of goals, of dreams, of vision. But yet he learned how to be content in the moment, even though things were not going like he expected. Because he goes on to say later on, I believe that he who has begun a good work in me can perfect it until the day, you know, until the day of the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the pressing forward, but not pushing forward. There is a little bit of a difference. It's you know, if you come up on a door and the door is locked, maybe it would be better to find the key than to explode it with an RPG. You know, that kind of thing. Don't go back and get in your car and ram through the door. Try to find the key that opens the door. So this you know, pushing forward, knowing that we have been called to something, as Yosef was called to something. His dreams were dreams of greatness, but yet he finds himself in a prison. And again, to go back to what I said earlier, he found himself in a prison, but still with the dreams. The prison didn't take away his dreams. In fact, what he would find out later on is the prison was the avenue to get him to the dream.
Mm.
Willingness to go through whatever it has to be to get to that dream. And then something we're talking about on the break of who is being brought into your life. You know, this is not the first time. When the cupbearer and the baker show up, this is not the first time that Yosef has seen people come and go from the prison. There's been probably a number of people that have come and gone. And so he could have just shunned these two men and said, well, you know, hey, they're here for a few days and they're going to be gone somewhere else. So, you know, why should I do that? Why should I involve myself into any relationship with them? Mm-hmm. But it appears that he did reach out to them just by the, you know, just by the interaction here. They said to him, we each had a dream. Now, why was it that they came to Yosef? They could have just stayed to themselves.
Well, his reputation had gone before him, you think?
His reputation in the prison, even. He was shown Ratzon, favor in the prison. But it appears, what I'm reading here, is that Yosef was continuing to reach out in relationships. Even to people that really, you know, may or may not could have helped him along the way, but he was there. He was there for people. When somebody comes to us with a need, these two men had a need. They had a dream, and they had a need of how to figure out what that dream meant. For one of them, it would go really well. The other one, not so good. But he was there for them to help them into the next step.
Well, you know, I'm reading here in chapter 39 at the end that when Yosef was placed in prison, that Yah was with him. Yah went to prison with him. There's a concept. He went into prison with him and extended favor to him so that he was promoted as high as you could be promoted as a prisoner within the prison, and basically given charge of all the other prisoners. That put him in a position then that when these two servants of Pharaoh came in, they were given to the charge of Yosef. And when Yosef came in, he saw that they were sad and asked him, what's sad? You know, what's going on with you? And that's when they related to him why they had this dream. Yosef, he couldn't help himself, Mike. You know, you talk about one of your favorite verses that a man's gifting will enable him to stand before kings. And Yosef's gifting just consistently looked for a place to be utilized. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard for me sometimes to get involved in the conversations to someone you meet in public. You know, you're sitting in an airport, you strike up a conversation or whatever. And I you know, I try to get a hold of myself. You know, we're not preaching today. You know, we're just going to be a normal human being. You know, and it's hard to keep the preacher in your pocket. I mean, eventually you're going to pull a sermon out of there somewhere. It's hard not to do that. Your gifting, your calling. And when you begin to realize, you know, someone's spiritual being is sitting here in the chair in front of me or beside me. Mm-hmm. It's not just them. I wonder if at times whether we are aware of it or not, that the need of people's spirit draws the gift out of us. Mm-hmm. And the need of these men made a demand, if you will, on the gift that was in Yosef to help them. Of course, there are those then that they discern our gifting, their spirit does, and instead of asking for help, they attack. But that's beside the point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking about this. You don't want to make enemies unnecessarily.
Yeah.
You know, you may vehemently disagree with someone over a doctrine or, you know, the use of a teaching. There are some folks out there promoting some ideology and some teaching thoughts that I think is a complete waste of time. if I go on social media or go on the radio here and I start preaching against them and call them a name and so forth, what I've done is made an enemy. I picked a fight. I don't know where, somewhere down the road, differences aside, that I might need them or they might need me. Why would we destroy a relationship with, you know, a potential relationship with someone unnecessarily? Even Yeshua said, you know, make friends with the unrighteous mammon. You know, they're business people out there. No, they're not necessarily what we would call righteous, but don't go picking a fight with them. You never know where you may need them, or they may need you. And if we burn a bridge unnecessarily, you know, like many of us have, we came out of places that we used to worship, and we didn't just burn a bridge, we obliterated it. We blew it to pieces. Now that we gained some maturity and we're looking back, we realize that wasn't a wise move. Mm-hmm. You know, how am I going to have any influence on those that used to be my peers if I don't have the willingness to go back and rebuild that bridge? Bridge building is one thing. Bridge rebuilding is hard work.
Yeah, that's much harder to rebuild a bridge than it is, and it takes much more time. We just had one in Franklin. They put in a new bridge. I mean, this thing took, it seemed like it was never going to get built. Why? Because they had to tear the other bridge down. They had to clean out. They had to do all those things. So it's a lot easier to just go ahead and build a bridge in the first place than to try to, you know, tear one down and do all that other kind of stuff. What we see here, Barry, just to something I've mentioned, I think, in previous years, but we're talking about how this relates to the renewed covenant, how it relates to our lives today. This thing with the baker and the cupbearer, I see this as a prophetic message of the Reformation, going back to the time of Martin Luther. That if we see this is a prophecy of Mashiach ben Yosef and this family of Israel that's going to come forth, the lost sheep of the house of Israel, that the baker was in charge of baking bread. The cupbearer was in charge of the wine. That's a prophetic symbol of the wine being blood, the baker, the bread, which is the grain of Torah. And so what do we see in Martin Luther's time? That he restored, the just shall live by faith, that thesis that he nailed to the Wittenberg Castle Church, the just shall live by faith, but then he turned his back on the Torah. So what do we see? We see the restoration of the cupbearer, and we see the baker being put to death. And the similarities there, maybe it doesn't speak to anybody else, it does to me. And what it speaks to me is this, that no matter how dysfunctional we see things, no matter how out of order we see things today, you know, people ask me very recently, in fact, is there any hope for this movement? Yes. Yes, there's hope. Not because of who we are, but because of who he is. He's got this under control. He's going to bring forth his promises, as I said earlier, in spite of us at times. Now, I'd rather be on the side of helping to restore those and bring forth those promises than being a hindrance to it. And which side are we on? Are we helping in the restoration, or are we becoming a hindrance to the restoration? It's a tragic thing to be standing in the way of the Father's plans,
thinking we're helping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know that opens up a whole new thing is. How many times have we thought we were helping, but we were really an obstacle to it?
Oh, yeah. will you please stop trying to help me?
Yeah. I've had enough of your help, children. I'll take this over from here. So we see that this, so exactly as it is portrayed, as exactly as the dreams have come about, it is Yosef. It was a dream that put him in the prison, and it will be a dream that gets him out of the prison.
You know, the storyline is filled, Mike, with all kinds of just clues here. It was, you know, Yosef's garment that was identified, and not only that was promoting of him, but, you know, identified him as dead to his father. His garment was left in the hand of Potiphar's wife. His garments get changed next week. One issue after the other like that in the story, you would think that maybe our lives are dull by comparison. Compared to what he went through, I'll take dull. Thank you, Father.
Compared to what Rob Scholl went through, compared to what Rob Scholl went through, I'll take dull any day.
Thank you, Father, that I was born mature and don't need a whole lot.
I was born real close to perfect, and you know, don't need a lot of those things to come about in my life for me to get to that place.
But at the same time, if we're honest, Mike, the things that we've gone through. When I was Yosef's age at that time, still young, still full of dreams, very idealistic, just and found myself in situations where I was just trying to survive, and trying not to fail. Forget succeeding, forget trying to be accomplished. I was just trying to find a way to put food on the table and not fail. And trying to believe idealistically that I'm called and that's all I got and that's all I need. I know the anointing's there, and I just, you know, and I relied totally on that. Man, I banked everything I had on calling. Everything. I wasn't experienced enough to have developed skill, so I banked on calling. Maybe that wasn't the wisest thing in the world, but you know what? It worked. We ate and we survived, and I learned a lot. But the Father put people in my life to teach, to train, to mature, to chasten, to instruct me and help me. Now, maybe Yosef didn't see these two fellow prisoners in that light, but they were going to become ultimately instrumental. At least one of them would. For his deliverance. There are folks around us right now. They're trying to help you. Whoever's listening, there are people in your life. They keep showing up and they're trying to help you. And you keep finding ways to say no. Don't swallow your pride. Repent of it and start listening. Let's let the Father use. You know, it might not even be a fellow believer. It could be a businessman or a neighbor or an antagonist, for that matter. It may try to be teaching you something. Whether that's their mental understood purpose or not, the Father will use people to help us. But you got to be teachable. I'm off my soapbox.
And Yosef was teachable. There's no doubt about it. He was teachable. In the end, I mean, we're going to see this amazing life of his. And really, coming back to where we started from, almost 25% of the book of Bereshit is written about Yosef. You know, it would seem to me, you know, creation itself only got a couple of chapters. The fall of Adam and Eve got a few verses. Noah did pretty good. Abraham gets a little bit, but here's this person, Yosef, who is going to be the type and shadow of one called Mashiach ben Yosef, Messiah, the suffering servant. there is so much that is here within this man that is, I still think this is a prophetic picture that is being lived out in the midst of our day. And one of the things that is the key we're going to find is that in the end, Yosef learned how to not hold a grudge.
Now, he had every reason to. You know, evidently at this point, Yosef is still carrying baggage.
Mm-hmm.
The sting of how he was treated and put in a pit and then ended up being in Mitzrayim, you know, his brothers had a lot to do with that. And you know, just being human, that he had to be angry and confused. Why did my brothers reject me? And more maybe even than that, he had to be wondering, why hasn't Daddy come to find me? Why did he abandon me? Does he even know what happened to me? And how am I going to get out of here? In his mind, he kept thinking, I've got to go back home. I've got to be the ruler of my family.
Mm-hmm.
They need me. Oh, they didn't need him. They were trying to quit thinking about him. So why is he suffering for doing what's right? And here's the big question. All my dreams and all my visions, how do they come to pass when I'm a prisoner? How does this work? The answers, or the lack of answers to those kind of questions, will drive you nuts. Mike, there are some things I can handle. You know, there are some choices that have been given to me to make. There are some things that is out of my hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When it's out of the wisdom teaches you, when it's out of your hands, leave it in his, because it's out of your control. There's nothing else to do about that.
Instead of stressing over something, you know, it's that old adage of how many things that a person worries about, how many of those things actually come to pass? And what can you do to change him anyway? There's nothing that Yosef can do to change anything about where he's at. He is there until the father changes his circumstances. Make the best of it. Make the best of where you are. And, you know, for him to be whining, complaining, you know, griping, stomping his foot, you know, throwing a pity party and all those kind of things, that's not going to help him get out of the jail. He's still going to be there. No matter where we find ourselves in life, we should make the best of where the Father has us. We've all been to the prison. Maybe not an actual jail cell, but we've all felt like we're in a prison at some times.
It's called being trapped.
Yeah, out of control. Life is out of control. It's going in front of me, and I don't have anything. I can't control anything. Okay, as you say, instead of taking it in your own hands, leave it in his. I mean, he's going to be up all night anyway, so why should we? Yeah, if the mighty one of Israel, he never slumbers and sleeps, so he's going to be awake all night. Why is it that we're, you know, that we're wrestling over this thing? Basically comes out of this, not trusting him. Yosef learned through his life to trust the Father. The biggest lesson, let's do the same.